The rising numbers of people who are testing positive for coronavirus in the country, there are a few concerns given that South Africa has a large number of people living with HIV. You may have heard that call from one of our listeners, Keith, a little earlier on, who said he's really worried about people in our country living with conditions like HIV and TB because he wonders what the consequences are going to be for them. So we thought we'd bring into the conversation Professor Shabir Mahdi. He's Professor of Vaccinology at Wits University, and he had a conversation with The Conversation publication in which he went through some of these really important issues, and we thought it necessary to bring him onto the program to just explain to us a little further what we need to know as South African citizens who are potentially threatened by the outbreak of this disease. Professor Mahdi, good afternoon, and thank you for your time on Afternoon Drive. I mean, we're being told by and large, particularly in the countries in which we've seen large outbreaks, that older people are more susceptible to the coronavirus and perhaps more susceptible even to succumbing to the coronavirus. But we've got a relatively young population with serious underlying conditions like perhaps HIV or tuberculosis. Should we be worried?
So good afternoon, Joanne, and thank you for having me on. So Joanne, the first point I think I need to make mention of is that everyone in a community is equally susceptible to being infected with a virus. So there's a study from China which shows that irrespective of whether you're an adult, whether you're old, whether you're a child, if you expose an individual with the virus, you're equally likely to be infected with the virus. Now, to go to your question, should we be worried in the context of South Africa where we've got a high prevalence of HIV and TB? There obviously is no data up to now in terms of coronavirus, but we can make an educated guess based on our experience with the seasonal influenza virus. And the two are probably not that different on a number of levels. They're obviously different in that so far as coronavirus has got a higher mortality rate, at least this particular coronavirus, than the seasonal flu. Now, what we know about a seasonal flu and HIV is that if an HIV individual that's living with HIV is not on antiretroviral treatment, the risk of dying of seasonal flu virus is about 150 to 200-fold greater than a person without HIV. If that HIV individual is actually on antiretrovirals, they still have a 44-fold greater risk of dying from seasonal influenza compared to someone without HIV. So even with antiretrovirals, we know that HIV-infected individuals have got a heightened susceptibility of severe influenza disease as well as a higher risk of actually dying. So do we expect anything different from coronavirus? And the answer, unfortunately, is not. People living with HIV are likely to be at heightened risk of developing severe disease as well as at the heightened risk of actually, unfortunately, dying from this particular virus.
Right. So I want to ask you in a moment about our response to that in particular, but many people would have thought if you are taking your medication regularly, even though you are an HIV patient or you are a TB patient, perhaps even a TB patient who is manifested with a multi-drug resistance, that you would be relatively okay. So the research is not actually telling you that necessarily.
Yeah, so unfortunately not. So individuals that have been started on antiretrovirals, especially when they've been started after their immune system has been compromised, they've gone into an immunodeficient state. The antiretrovirals does not completely reconstitute the immune system. So there's still a number of deficits in the immune system. So they still remain at heightened susceptibility for a number of infectious causes. I just cited one example. Another example is pneumococcal disease, where even in the HIV-infected individuals on antiretrovirals still have got a much heightened risk of developing pneumococcal disease than individuals without HIV. So antiretrovirals reduces the risk, but it doesn't diminish the risk down to the general population level.
So Dr. Mahdi, Professor, would you say our emergency response in this country has taken into account the reality that we've got a large sector of the population who are actually living with HIV or TB at the moment?
Right. So, Jen, I think the reality is that we can't be doing any more than we're currently doing in the context of the cases that we're experiencing currently. And that, I think, is the bottom line. But the challenge that we're going to face is that if there is community dissemination of the virus and community transmission of the virus, then the entire dynamics in terms of the response, in terms of our strategy for containment is going to change and is going to need to be revised. Whether we adequately prepared for that right now is difficult to tell because it also depends on how widespread the transmission is. So there's a number of unknowns, but it would be strongly advised for us to start looking at that case scenario where there is community, where we assume there would be community transmission and what would be required in terms of scaling up our curative healthcare services to actually mitigate whatever might come our way.
So this leaves us with a little bit of a dilemma. And we had Professor Guy Richards from WITS on a little bit earlier on talking about the fact that we know that it's largely people who might fall into income earning categories, which might be considered upper middle class or elite, who've actually manifested with the virus so far. But of course, the danger exists that this could eventually trickle down to other sectors of the population. And you could end up with a situation where people who are living in informal settlements, for example, manifest with the virus. What happens in a population in which people are staying in communities where their immunity is compromised just by very virtue of the living conditions in which there isn't proper sanitation, access to water and the like, and you've got people who are potentially immunocompromised by the two diseases we've spoken about.
Yeah. So Jen, I mean, I think we're being highly optimistic into if we believe that there isn't going to be community transmission of the virus. I think what we've seen emerge in Europe pretty much tells us that we can expect some level of community transmission in South Africa. Like you pointed out, there are a number of additional factors that predisposes to a heightened susceptibility of severe disease in a South African context. Be it related to nutritional issues, be it related to HIV, be it related to TB. The bottom line is I think we need to plan for that case scenario, and there's absolutely no way. I think there's simply no way that we're going to be able to put into place measures that guarantees that there isn't going to be community circulation of this virus. I think it's almost a given right now that there will be community transmission, and many people will be afraid to hear that, but I think it's also important to put it into context. And I think the context that I want to highlight, if you allow me just 1 minute, is just to go through some basic figures, which are really, really important. So in the epicenter of this epidemic, which is Wuhan, right, the number of individuals that have developed symptomatic disease from this virus is about 6 for every 1,000 of the population.
All right.
The number of individuals that have developed severe disease is 15% of that, which is roughly about 1 for every 1,000 of the population. The number of people that have died in Wuhan, the epicenter of that epidemic, is 24 per 100,000 of the population. Now, let me put that into the South African context. The number of people that are going to die from seasonal influenza this year is roughly 23 per 100,000. The number of people that are going to die this year in South Africa because of motor vehicle accidents is 24 per 100,000, exactly the same as the number of people that have died of coronavirus in Wuhan up to now.
Okay,
so I think we need to put context in terms of the discussion that we had. The majority of individuals that show manifest symptoms are actually mild. 85 to 88% of individuals will have a mild illness that's self-limiting. As you correctly pointed out, there are certain risk groups that are at a heightened susceptibility of developing severe disease and more likely to die. As an example, people over the age of 75, their risk of dying after developing an illness is 14% compared to a 1% risk for someone else that's completely healthy. So there's sort of a skew, but like you correctly mentioned at the start, the biggest concern in South Africa relates to individuals with TB, and their risk of dying, if you put them into a category of chronic lung diseases, is roughly about 7% if they become symptomatic.
All right.
People with HIV, probably even higher than that.
So, Prof, this is something certainly to consider as we go forward, but I'm glad that you've balanced that with the Wuhan comparison, which helps us to understand a little bit better exactly what we are facing here. Thank you for your insight into that. Professor of Vaccinology at WITS, Shabir Mahdi.